Welcome to the Board Games with Scott podcast. This is just the audio from the Board Games with Scott videos. To see the full videos, head over to www.boardgameswithscott.com.
Hi there. Welcome to Board Games with Scott. This is a weekly video log or vlog where I take a game and review it, tell you a little bit about it, give you an idea of how to play, and maybe help you make a decision if it's something you'd want to buy. This week, I'm going to be talking about Indonesia. It's not just a big bar of chocolate. It's a game! It's a fairly long and deep game as well. This game is made from a company called Splatterspellen. It is a company from the Netherlands. They've done other large games like Roads and Boats and Antiquity and things like that. These are all games that actually I enjoy, but they do take a little longer than the sort of games I've talked about typically here. This game will take somewhere in the vicinity of 3 to 5 hours the first time you play it, a little bit less after you've played it a few times. It's an interesting game. It plays 2 to 5 players, and it's about producing and shipping goods and dealing with mergers and acquisitions. I have enjoyed the game and the times I've played it, and so I know a lot of people are curious about it because it just came out in 2005, and they want to know if they like it. It's an expensive game. This game will cost you about $80 to $100 in U.S. currency in order for you to get it. So I know people are curious about the game, so I wanted to talk about it on this week's Board Games with Scott. This is a heavier game than what I've talked about, although I've introduced it to people who have not played games much more complex than Settlers, and they were able to pick up on the game fairly easily and get into it. Despite the length of the game, I actually do feel engaged throughout the entire game. So it's one that I enjoy quite a bit. So why don't we open up the box and see what's inside? Here's what comes inside the game box. You have a very big board, and as you can see, it's a pretty board. It's in nice muted colors. The text that you'll see later is written in pretty swirly text, which actually can make it fairly difficult to read at times. You've got a number of these fairly sturdy chips that represent a company. You have some boats in different colors and shapes, a total of 6 different combinations. You have some nice wooden bits to indicate turn order and things about research and development. I'll talk about that later. There's some fairly large glass beads, which are used to represent cities on the board. And this is one of the problems with the components, is that the beads, in many cases, are larger than the spaces where they're supposed to go. You've got money with little bitty cardboard coins that you have got to keep up with. Like with many Splatter games, you've got tons and tons of little chips. And this is another case where, in this case, the chips can actually be wider than the spaces you're trying to put the chips on. You have to work around that. And then each player has a nice reference card. This is actually very well designed. It shows you the turn order. It tells you, gives you reference on what everything costs, a place for your money, and a place for your bank, which I'll talk about a bit later. Some of the little cards, which you just use very briefly, it tells you where you're going to be putting cities on the board. So that's the components. That's what you get. This is what your $100 gets you. Again, it's pretty expensive for what is there, but you have to decide if it's something that's a game experience that you're interested in investing in. So why don't I actually get in and talk a little bit about the gameplay? The first thing I'm going to talk about is the most complex part of the game, and that is the operations phase of the shipping, because everything else plays into this. So if you understand this phase of the game, then I'll have reference which explain everything else. Now, we've got a game already in play. It's what I'm showing you here. These stones represent cities. These are 2 cities on the board. The boats represent a shipping company. So there's 1 shipping company here made up of these 2 boats, and a shipping company here made up of these 2 boats. The small tiles, each one of these represents a different production company. So these 2 are rice production companies. This one over here is a spice production company. By the way, something that the game does that's quite interesting is because the way it introduced companies onto the board, it's going to force you into conflict right away. So you're going to be dealing with each other immediately. Another nice thing this game does, and this is something that's common to a lot of Splatters games, is you start out relatively small. You start out like this, with just a few pieces on the board. It really helps you get a feel of the game. And then it's going to ramp up. By the end of the game, the board's going to be covered with ships and chits and all of that. It's going to look very complex. But the nice thing is you start out with just one little one little place for your company, one boat for your shipping, and you grow out from there. So what I'm going to talk about now is the concept of shipping and how that works, because that's going to impact everything else I talk about. Now, each city during the operations phase can receive goods from the production companies. The blue cities, which are a level one city, can receive one type of good, of each good that's on the board during the phase. Cities do have the ability to be upgraded to a yellow city, a level two city, in which case each city can receive two of each type of good during the phase. Now, in order to deliver a good to a city, you must use boats. So what will happen is the person who owns this company here, even if they want to deliver that rice to this city, they must use a boat to do it. You can't just send it next door. So this person would use this boat to deliver a good to this city. The way it works is when you deliver a good, you mark that that city has received a good by using the backside of these tokens. That indicates that that city has received one rice, can't receive any more rice this turn. And then what will happen is this person will get a payment of $20, so 20 currency, whatever it is, rupiah for making this delivery, but they have to pay the owner of the boat 5. So this player will get 15, this player will get 5. Now, this company over here, if they wanted to ship to this city, they're out of luck, because this city has already received a shipment of rice this turn. So this player is going to be out of luck. They'll have to ship to another city on the board if it's possible. Over here, this city could receive a shipment of rice. It can also receive a shipment of spice. So there's one player that has a spice. Now, if you look, the ocean lines are set off by these blue lines on the board. And so there can be any number of boats in each one of these blue ocean spaces. And in order to ship a good, you have to use the same company's boats for the entire trip. You can't ship. You can't change shipping companies in midstream. So if I started here, I would have to use all blue boats to get to a city. I could not change over to red boats halfway through. I have to use all one color boats for each shipment. So I might send this spice and send it via this boat and then via this boat to this city. And again, I take a marker to indicate that that city has received spice. Now, I don't lose these markers. They stay there on the board. This just represents my capacity. And so each land space can hold one of these little chits. And so your companies will grow as the game goes on. Now, this is where turn order really comes into play. Between these two people, the person who is first in the turn order is going to be the one that gets the ship to that city. But this guy's got no competition, so he really doesn't care at this point who goes first or second, because no one else is going to be shipping spice over here. Not yet, at least. What will happen during the game, then, if a city receives one of every type of good that's available on the board. At this point, there's two types of goods, but as the game goes on, there's going to be rubber, and there's going to be microwave meals, and there's going to be oil. As the game goes on, there'll be more stuff. And if a city can get one of everything, then at the end of that turn, at the end of that phase, the city will upgrade to the next level. So a level two city, which is the Yellowstone, can then take two of every good during the shipping phase. And if that city gets two of everything available on the board, they'll then upgrade to a level 3 city, which point they can receive 3 of each good during the phase, and that's as high as it goes. So that's the shipping phase. This is the main way that people make money. So the producers are going to make money by shipping goods from place to place. The people shipping are going to make money because their boats are used. In this case, the spices are worth 25. So for shipping that one spice to here, this player will get 25, but has to pay 10 to the owner of this boat line. Now, here's where if another player is set up over on this side and uses this player's boats to ship to a different city, this player gets paid off again. So what happens is the producers sort of control their own destiny. They're going to ship goods, they're going to ship whatever they can, they're going to make money, they're going to pay little nickels to all of the boat lines. And the boat lines, they want to be as convenient as possible to everyone else, so that they can continue to get lots and lots of those little nickels, and they will do quite well. And I found the game is actually quite balanced. You could play just doing the shipping and make a goodly amount of income. You can play just doing the production and do well as well. Or you could try and balance between the two. That's harder to pull off. If you balance, then you might run a small shipping company and small production company with the hopes of being able to always ship your own goods so you don't have to pay someone else. Now you can see, I'll also talk a little bit about the board since I'm zoomed in here. You can see that each color on the board represents different country, and there's some symbols here, and those symbols, it's actually fairly clever. It's going to tell you later on in the game when things will occur. So, for example, here in this country, you can see that nothing's going to happen during the first phase of the game. There's three phases, A, B, and C. Nothing's going to happen during phase A of the game. During phase B of the game, there's the possibility that someone's going to be able to play a city somewhere here. During phase C of the game, there will be an oil company available in this area. So that's what that's telling you. You see this all over the board. You can see how the map is kind of carved up into all these little sections. And so dealing with all these little sections, trying to figure out, well, what section's next to what? How are they adjacent? What's next to the ocean? The oceans get fairly confusing down here. It's not always quite clear what things are next to what in the ocean, and do you need a boat on the bottom and on the top? That's all been discussed over at Board Game Geek. That's my biggest complaint with the game, is just trying to deal with figuring out what's next to what on the board, because that's fairly important in what you're dealing with. Another concept I want to talk about in the game is the concept of expansion. What will happen is during the operations phase, a transport line will be able to expand based upon what their maximum is. Down here at the bottom, it tells you during the first phase of the game, this transportation company can have 2 boats. In the next phase of the game, they can have 3. In the next phase of the game, they can have 4. So if a company is not at its maximum number of boats, in this case, let's say we're in the second phase of the game, then during the expansion, the player controlling that company can put another boat in a sea area that's adjacent to what's already out there. And that's going to then enable people to ship further and further. With production companies, the way they expand, if they are able to successfully ship every good they have, this production company can produce 1 good, so if that company can successfully ship that 1 good, then they can expand, and they expand to the left or right. They are blocked by cities, however, so this person will have to expand this way. So if they get to ship everything, they can expand. If they don't get to ship everything, they can actually pay to expand, and sometimes it's worth it to do that. And you're just going to pay the same amount as the payout is for your company, in which case with Rice it's 20. By the way, I know all of that because, again, the reference sheet that you have has down on the bottom the values of everything. That's very well done. It's in a good, convenient place to refer to these things. So that's the way expansion works. Now, one of the things that happens is if you have 2 companies that are moving toward each other and they produce the same good, they cannot actually take over the space in the middle. So this is a case where this is one big space. These are also one spaces, but they're all carved up. Neither Rice player can take over that space because then you wouldn't know which company owned what. It would all be a mess. So there's always got to be a space between production companies that are producing the same type. Another type of good can certainly go in there later on in the game if that can happen. And that won't be a problem. But there's another way that you could end up putting a Rice there, and that's through mergers and acquisitions, which are really the interesting part of this game. So let me talk about that. Mergers and acquisitions are how these companies combine. This game starts out with players controlling lots of little companies, and then they're going to combine, and there'll be fewer but big companies left on the board. So, for example, these 2 Rice companies could be merged, in which case they would be considered to be 1 big production company, and you could end up putting a little Rice marker there. If these 2 were merged together, it would be 1 big group. You can also merge shipping companies, in which case you could merge these 2 shipping companies together. If these 2 shipping companies would merge, you would end up swapping out boats to make them all the same boat, or at least all the same color boat. And that then enables people to do a much better job shipping all the way across the world. Because as the game goes on, you'll end up having fewer shipping companies that are these massive companies. Because when you merge them together, you also get to add together the maximum number of boats that they can have. So now, with this string of boats, this is going to enable people to ship quite a ways back and forth. And so part of what you want to do if you're running a shipping company is to have the most efficient shipping line that allows people to use your boats to get to many cities that they couldn't before. Here's an interesting rule about the game. If you are a producer and you have the ability to ship somewhere, even if you don't want to, you must ship. So, for example, someone over here may not want to have to use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 boats to ship rice from here to up here. But if they can and they have no other choice, they have to do it. So in this case, they would actually lose $5 because they'd have to pay the owner of this shipping line 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, but rice only pays off 20. You have to do it, though. If you can, you must. I've only seen this come into play right at the end of the game, when you've got a lot of people shipping a lot of different goods. I've only seen that happen a couple times, where you were forced to actually pay money to ship something because you had to, because there were no other choices on the board. Now, the way a merger and acquisition works is a player will announce that they want to merge two companies of the same type. So you're going to merge Rice and Rice, or you're going to merge two transportation companies. Now, that when it starts, these companies are most likely owned by other players, although they could both be owned by the same player. So one player will announce a merger. They'll say, we're going to merge these two transportation companies. And let's say it was in the case that we had on the board, where these two were a blue company and then these three were a red company. Say we're going to merge these two. What you do is you count up the number of boats that are in a shipping company. So that's five of those. Each one's a base of 10. Again, that reference sheet tells you that. So the bidding for this is going to start at 50. And it's going to go up in increments of 5 because there are 5 boats involved. So you'll go around the board. People will continue to raise the bid or pass. The winner controls now all of this shipping. And it could be someone that didn't have either of these companies to start out with. So you may do a really good job building up your company, but then someone else buys it out from under you in a merger and an mergers and acquisitions. So something to watch out for. If you're worried about that, then you need to always make sure you have some cash on hand so you're able to bid to protect the company that you've built up. Otherwise, you might find someone buys that company from you. You'll get a pile of cash. The reason why all the bids have to be made in 5-unit intervals in this case is so that you're able to equally split up the money appropriately. The person who controlled this line will end up getting 3/5 of the final bid, and the person who controlled this line, because there were two boats in it, will end up getting 2/5 of the final bid. Works exact same way for production companies. In this case, you know, if you were to merge these two together before this one was played, it's 2 and 2, and so that's a total of 4. You multiply that times the base cost for Rice, which is 20 each, so this company would start at 80 and go up. And so it would have to go up in increments of 4 because there are 4 chips involved in these two companies, and then the money would be split equally between them. Many times what happens is one of the two players that already owns one will get involved. Actually, then in this case, it would only pay half in order to greatly enlarge their company. And the nice thing about it is if these two are merged together, then this production company could ship from down south here. From up top here, you can ship from any place you have a chip. So you don't, if you want to ship that good, it doesn't have to come out of that space. It can come out of any of the spaces owned by that company. Now, they all have to connect like this, but that will enable you many times to reach both coasts of a continent if you have a line of things across on both sides, and you can ship your goods from either side. So that's very nice. What I want to talk about now, though, is the research and development portion of the game, because this is what enables you to do everything I've talked about. All right, this is the research and development track, and this is where some very interesting things happen during the game. Now, it also will tell you the turn order from first to fifth. The way this works is I usually keep the discs off to the side. Ideally, you have them all stacked up because everyone starts out at level 1 on everything that we have here. And then each turn, you're going to get to go up by 1 for free. So everyone technically is on level 1, so when someone puts a track, I start them at the second row. You could stack them all up here, but then one knock and it all goes tumbling and people say bad words and you know how that goes. So let me talk about each one of these. Now first is turn order bid. Remember earlier I talked about the importance of turn order? Well, the way it's determined is by an auction. Each player gets to make one and only one bid, and so that's going to determine the turn order. So this is a multiplier. So if you have times 25, if you've taken 2 levels of research and development, then whatever money you put down is multiplied times 25, times 100, times 400. This is really big between levels. Usually what happens is everyone that's together on a level, they're going to bid to see who goes first, and then there'll be other people together on a level bidding because the bids are multiplied by these huge multipliers. So again, that just helps you to go earlier in the round, and that can be important if you're a production company, for example, and you're fighting with someone to be the first to deliver to a city. The next is slots. Again, everyone starts at 1, so everyone starts with 1 slot. And what slots allow you to do is to own more companies. So everyone starts here, you know, everyone's got the ability for 1 company chip. So 1 company. And what will happen is that if you spend your research and development to move that up to 2, you can then own 2 different company chips. Now, a merged company put together counts as one slot. So, because once they're hooked together, they're never going to be separated for the game. They're just going to count as a single slot. Mergers. Again, everyone starts at one. The merger's ability allows you to be the one to announce a merger. And the number that you have in mergers is the number of company chips that can be involved. So at the beginning, everyone's at one. There can be no mergers because you can't just merge one company chip. When someone spends their research and development turn to go up to two, they can then say, okay, we're going to merge these two together. Now, if that person moves up to three, later on in the game, they can say, we're going to merge this company, which is the two we merged earlier, with this company. That's a total of three chips. And that'll become one big company. And again, this big company still takes up just a single slot once they're merged all together. That goes up to five as well. Expansion. Again, everyone starts at an expansion level of one. And this tells you when you get to expand by how many spaces you can expand. So if you're doing a shipping company, this tells you how many boats you get to put out. If you're doing a production company, this tells you how many of these little chips you get to put on the board. So as you raise this, let's say it's up at three, then if you ship all of your goods, you get to put three more of these on the board, which makes that you can next time you can produce three goods instead of just the one good. So raising expansion is very good for someone who's doing production because you're going to be quickly growing and taking over more of the board. The next one is hull player. Here's what that means. Normally, a boat during the shipping phase can only handle one good from one company. So if I'm in a situation where I'm trying to ship a good and I use a boat, you know, once I've shipped over red lines, then this company can't ship again using that red line because the hull is at one. But if I've moved that up to two, then let's say I've expanded on a future turn and I have two of these next to each other, I can use this boat twice during the shipping turn. But only twice. And you can take that all the way up to five. So that's going to let your shipping companies be more effective, be able to carry more things at once. This final track is actually just used to indicate who actually controls what. Let's say the white player went up to two. Then if the white player controlled this shipping line, they could put that on the board under two, which just makes it easy to see that those boats can carry two things from every company each turn. So during the game, you're going to get, 10 to 12 of these bumps up on these tracks. And as you can see, they end up being pretty powerful. The turn order is really powerful. Again, if you want to go early, you go up on this track. If you want to have lots of companies, you buy lots of slots. If you want to pick the mergers, which can be very valuable, you go up on here. Expansions let you spread out all over the board quickly. And hull player allows you to be much more effective. You have to always move your own color with the one exception of hull player. If you don't want to move your own color, you can choose to move another player up on the hull player row. That actually happens because a player who's doing production that's hampered because they have some shipper that's not raised the hull player may want to give up their research and development to move that other player's shipping line up to allow them to ship more goods. I have seen that happen. I've actually done that. It can be an effective way to use your turn. So that's the research and development component, and that's really what makes this game, I think, very interesting. Because as the game develops, different players are going to have different powers. They're going to be different, they have different abilities, and that really impacts how you play the game. So now I've talked about all these different pieces, so let me sort of put them all together and talk about the order of play. So the first thing that happens is it says new era. You check to see if you've entered a new era, that ABC I showed you earlier, the A, B, and C down here at the bottom on the production companies. You have the three numbers, 1, 2, and 3. You start out in A, and you check to see if there is only one type of company sitting out there on the board, then you move into the next era, era B. At that point, new cities will appear. Each player at the start of the game is going to get three of these chits, and these chits indicate to that player where they are going to be able to place the city. And you get one for A, and you get one for B, and you get one for C as well. And so you have a little information about where you are going to be able to place cities on the board. So you get these at the start, and you can see in phase A, you're going to get to put a city there or there. In B, you have some choices. In C, you have some choices. So whenever you enter a new era, another five cities appear on the board. Second is bid for turn order. So in that case, you go once around. Everyone places a bid. If you have a multiplier on your research and development track, you get to add that in. Now here's something interesting. money that you bid does not go out of the game. Normally, your money is going to be sitting here in the cash area. And when you place a bid, you put the money in the middle, you bid, and then when it's over, you move it over to the bank. At the end of the game, you're trying to have the most money. That's your goal. And money that you've used to bid on turn order does not go out of the game. It just sits over here in the bank. You can't use it anymore, but you won't lose it when it comes to the final scoring. So what happens is people are willing to bid quite a bit for turn order because that money is not going away for good. It's just put aside and you'll score it later on in the game. Phase 3 mergers. Anyone that has the ability to announce a merger, because they've bought levels on the merger track, they've moved up on the merger track, may announce mergers at this point. And then you bid on the mergers and you see what happens. And one thing I want to talk about with mergers that I haven't discussed yet. Usually mergers must always be between two companies of the same type, two rubber companies, for example. There's one exception, and that's to make these microwave meals. There's the microwave meals on the board, and to make microwave meals, you merge a spice and a rice. So a spice and a rice company merge together to make a microwave meal company. Now, there's no special chit for that. You just stack them up to show that this is a microwave meal company. And then that, what's actually going to happen on the board is it's going to change the type of good that person is shipping. They also lose half of them. They're reduced by half, although the goods ship for 35 each. It can be valuable to do if you find yourself constrained because you keep fighting with people to ship your spice or ship your rice. You can just switch over and ship microwave meals, and then you'll know you'll be able to ship. Later on in the game, you can merge a microwave meal company with another microwave meal company to make a bigger one, but that's the only merger that can happen. This would require a merger level of 4 because it's involving 4 individual chips. So people announce their mergers. You go around until everyone who had merger ability decides to either do a merger or not do a merger. Then you go on to phase 4, which is acquisitions. At that point, everyone gets to pick a company from the board in turn order for free. If their company's still sitting out there, they can just take that company for free. This is where having slots is useful. If you have a slot available, then you can take that company. Just like in mergers, you can only bid in the merger if you have a slot available for that company. So it can be good, actually, to have one slot sitting there unused because that lets you participate in these phases of the game. If you're all full, you can't do these things. Research and development, that's where you move up on these tracks. You decide which track you're going to move up on. Operations. Again, in operations, the way it goes is you go in turn order. The first player gets to operate one of their companies. So if that is a shipping company, they can expand. That's all you do with a shipping company. If it's a production company, then you look to see where you can deliver all of your goods. You deliver goods and you make money. And you pay the people whose boats you used. You can do one of your companies. So each chit's going to be a different company. So you can do one. The next player does one in turn order. The next player does one. You go around and then people do their second company and their third company, etc. This is where turn order can be really critical because the cities get full fairly quickly. So going earlier in the turn order can help you to make sure you ship your goods to the cities. And then city growth. You check to see, did any city get one of everything that's available on the board? So what that means is as soon as someone starts producing these microwave meals, they have to be delivered to a city as well for that city to grow. So blue cities, once they get one of everything, turn into a yellow city. That's level 2. Once they get everything, it goes to level 3. So that's how the game works. You continue, then go back to new era. You see if you hit a new era. When you're in era C, the game ends when you would trigger a new era. So when you look at the board and you see, hey, there are no more companies, there are only one type of companies on the board, then the game is over at that point. And one thing you have to track is after the last phase of the game, you actually get paid out double whatever you made in the operations phase of the game. So if you go all the way through, you end up in, when you're in phase C, you put the money that you make during operations aside. Because if the game happens to end at the end of that, at the end of these actions, then you get to double that before you calculate your final score. And that's all you do. You then add up how much money you have. The game's all about making money. So it's like there's one more turn that really goes on, that virtual turn. That's the effect of doubling the last turn's money. So that actually becomes a little fiddly. You have to make sure that once you hit era C, you're always taking the money from each operations phase, putting it to the side, until you see if the game goes on. If the game goes on, you then put the money in your cash and continue. If the game ends, you double that money from only the last turn and then add up the money and see who wins. And that's how the game works. You just repeat these phases until you've gone through phase A, B, and C. I find that in play, you tend to move through phases A fairly quickly, and you actually move through phase C fairly quickly. Phase B tends to take the longest, but it always seems that the game's moving along. I doesn't feel that it bogs down, even though it does take, you know, 2 to 4 to 5 hours. I think the first time I played it, it took about 4 hours, and the second time it took about 3. So it does take a little while, but it seems to keep moving. It does a good job of not bogging down. Well, that's Indonesia. I hope you stayed with me through all of that. I realize it was fairly complex, but I wanted to take a little time and explain how you play the game. I enjoy this game. I've played it a few times. I really enjoy games where you don't have a solid position in the game, that through the mergers and acquisitions you can find what you held is now held by someone else, and now you hold a big pile of money. Or if you like the way someone else has run their company, you can buy it out from under them. I like that in a game. It keeps things dynamic. It keeps it exciting. The bidding for a merger and acquisition in this game ends up being a fairly tense thing. It's enjoyable. The fact that you can play this game through several paths is nice, that you can either play it doing primarily shipping things around, that you can produce goods and try to get them to cities. You can do a little bit of both. You know, you can enable people to ship and also produce yourself. And if you don't like what you're doing, you can just set up a merger and buy someone else's company and go into the shipping business. The chart for research and development makes it so that players end up being fairly strong in different things. It's a pretty significant part of the game. And you get so few steps forward on that chart that each time you play, you can try a different path to be stronger in different things. It's amazing how a few steps on that chart makes a big difference on how you can play the game. The downside of this game, it can be challenging to deal with the board at times. The board's not as clear as it could be. They've chosen aesthetics over function in some places. After a few games, you begin to get in your head, you know, what's connected to what, and what's part of what, and deal with the fact that some of the bits are bigger than some of the spaces that are on the board. It's one of those things that the first few plays you're going to feel frustrated and constrained by, because you're going to be wondering what's actually going on the board, and what's connected and what's not connected. You'll be asking these sort of questions. With that said, I like this game a lot. I do recommend it. I think this is a good, solid B-plus game. Were it a little shorter, I would give it a higher ranking. Were the board a little clearer, I'd give it a better ranking. But as it stands, and for the cost, you know, actually bringing the cost might even take it down to a B if you're in the United States, because it is a lot of money for this game. For that much, you could buy, you know, 3 or 4 other games. So it's a decision if you want to add it to your collection. I will say the company's a small company. They don't make a lot of games, so their games tend to run out, and they tend to go up in value. So it's a game that, you know, if you're buying thinking, I want to resell that someday, it's a good choice for that kind of thing. I'm glad I own it. I do pull it out every few months and enjoy the game, give an afternoon to it. So with that, hopefully you've decided to take a step towards a meatier game. But if not, there's plenty of other choices over Board Games with Scott. If you want to talk about this game, you can head over to Board Game Geek. There are people there who are happy to talk about the games. Next week on Board Games with Scott, I'll have another exciting video for you to watch and learn about some game you haven't seen before. So with that, I'll thank you for coming, and I will see you in a future week. Farewell!
Board Games with Scott is under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Scott can be reached at scott@scottnicholson.com.